Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. And it is finally upon us. Real live football to talk about finally today. Also, the Steelers are preparing for life without Elbel, and Odell is preparing for life against Jalen Ramsey. But we start with the game that has been circled on my NFL schedule on the fridge at home for weeks. The one that kicks off the 2018 NFL season, Falcons and Eagles, a rematch of the NFC divisional round. Probably just a coincidence. Nick Foles and the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles taking on Matt Ryan and that high-flying offense of the Atlanta Falcons. Foles will be getting the start and relief of the injured Carson Wentz. We will kick off this conversation with you, Chris Carter. What will be the biggest challenge for the Eagles tonight against those Atlanta Falcons?
I mean, teams talk about distractions, and there's no more distractions when the team is defending Super Bowl champs. Last week, we got into conversations about people in the organization. They had put up signage as far as, you know, to remember last year's season in the locker room. Malcolm Jenkins was very, very vocal. They end up taking that signage down, celebrating their win in Super Bowl 52 last year, knowing it's a new season. Just knowing and accepting how different it's going to be. I think people remember the end of the season, but beginning of the season, it started with the Eagles. They started off very, very slow. I think the second week of the season, the Giants game, they win on the
62-yard field goal at the gun.
And at that point, I think people thought the Eagles were a playoff team. They had very, very good personnel. But were they a Super Bowl team? No. People let them just go about their schedule, see where they were going to be by maybe October, what type of identity. But we forget what a great start that they got off to. Now, they had bad news along the way as far as injuries, but, man, they got off to a fabulous start. I wouldn't be surprised. You guys come on the show tomorrow and be like, Eagles 0-1.
They're only 1-point favorites. I mean, Vegas says it's basically a pick 'em.
I mean, is there a reason to panic? And I just think the expectations for this team, and after you've won a Super Bowl, I think it will take some adjustment. It will take their fans some adjustment to get to. Nick Foles does not play well in tonight's opening game. People will begin to panic. So I just think the expectations are totally different, realizing the season is going to be totally different, and they're not going to go undefeated, realizing there's going to be different obstacles. We overcame them as a team. Let's just go forward as a team. They have the best roster, 53-man roster, I believe, in the NFL. They have the best quarterback situation in the NFL. They're the only team that would not be starting their starting quarterback, their franchise quarterback, that I would have a great deal of concern. The reason why is because their offense and defensive line support the team and the quarterback so well. So this is a good football team. They got a great roster. What's going to happen in 2018? Don't worry about what happened in 17, because it's the storyline. It might end the same, but I know the other subplots along the journey will be totally different.
Well, your point about how the season started, I want to expand on that. Philadelphia was able to play last year almost the entire season without ever really having, oh, that's the best team in the league, target on their back. Early in the year, nobody thought they were. By the time they were considered, wait, the best team in football? Then their quarterback goes down, and once again, nobody thinks they're the best team in football. Even as the number one seed, they were the underdog in every playoff game.
They never really had the spotlight on them all season compared to
now. They absolutely will. Now, so their biggest struggle, their biggest challenge tonight is going to be starting with their quarterback situation. Is it going to be Nick Foles of the last couple games of the playoffs? Nick Foles the couple games before that? Somewhere in between. But I think on a bigger picture level, their biggest challenge tonight and throughout the season is going to be, can they stick with the philosophy that got them where they were? Yes, it was about talent. Yes, it was about depth. It was also about the Eagles were historically aggressive on fourth down, historically great on third downs. Those are the types of things that when you're Doug Peterson and people are questioning you as a head coach, you're coming off a 7-9 season, Howie Roseman just got his job back. You know what? Let's go for it. If it's not going to go right, I want to go down my way. It's very different when you're the defending champs, you're the favorites in your conference, when people like Chris Carter are saying you have the best roster in the NFL, then all of a sudden, those gutsy fourth and short, should we go for it? It becomes a lot easier to say, oh, let's trust this great roster. Let's not do things that could put our decisions in jeopardy. I think one of the reasons they were so good last year is they went for more coin flip fourth downs, meaning not late in a game where you have to, than any team has in a decade in this league. And they were very good at that, and they were historically great on third downs. How are they going to be able to do that?
You're talking about identity.
Yes.
Okay, so they had an identity. They established it, and even though their quarterback changed, that's a very, very good observation. And I believe that to be very accurate.
Speaking of identity, let's talk about the Falcons for a second, because even though they were successful last year, they were still a different team than they were in 2016 when they came out flying, and they had that really high-potent offense. All of a sudden, last year came, and while they were still great, they weren't nearly the team that they were the year before. And I think when you talk about which Nick Foles is going to show up, you also have to wonder, yes, there's a new offensive coordinator, but which Atlanta Falcons team are we going to see this year?
Well, they have a very explosive team. It's led by their quarterback. They have a number of skilled people that present dangerous problems. Julio Jones, people know about Julio and his resume, but in this game, if you look at what's one part of the Philadelphia Eagles that could be suspect besides their quarterback play, that's their secondary, and especially their cornerback play. Yep. Will it be as good as it was last season? Because if it's not, now they do have a rush and everything to get there, but they have to decide how they're going to cover Julio Jones. I believe Steve Sarkisian, in his second year as the offensive coordinator there in Atlanta, him and Matty Ice will have a spectacular season. Last year, they had, people don't watch all the Falcons games, I know this because no one besides your home base watches all, they had a lot of bad bounces, a lot of breaks, a lot of receiver tip passes, a lot of maybe just, I thought the guy was going to go out three steps. He only went out two steps, and something bad happened. So this is a good football team that will be vying for a playoff spot. But if they can get that offensive line and their defensive line, now going against the Eagles, the defensive line a little undersized, offensive line a little undersized, but will they give Matty Ice enough time to be able to throw the football and to be able to throw it down the field, which takes more time?
Right.
That will determine how the Falcons and what their season will be like.
Chris, you poke fun at me and my analytical lean, but last year was,
amongst other things.
Yes, last year was the perfect example of when we say regression to the mean. Atlanta in 2016, en route to becoming one of the seven highest scoring offenses in the history of football. All those tip passes fell to the ground cleanly. The fumble luck went their direction. They were over the top efficient in every phase of the game. Play action shot passes, deep shot, short passes. And in 2017, that regressed to the mean. All of a sudden, they're not nearly as efficient in the red zone. Now, part of that was the coordinator change. But those tip passes became interceptions. Those fumbles you were falling on, the other team is falling on. What I think is most noteworthy about this game, though, aside from the quarterback situation, is what you alluded to, C. Atlanta's secondary can get got, but their front seven is an underrated unit. They have Grady Jarrett as one of the better run stuffers in the league. Mm-hmm. I think Deion Jones is one of your more underrated inside backers. Vic Beasley, their outside linebacker, led the NFL in sacks 2 years ago, and Tack McKinley, who they drafted as another pass rusher, had a good rookie season. How will that front seven deal with one of the best offensive lines in football in Philly? And on the flip side, the best unit of maybe any unit on any team is the Eagles' collection of defensive linemen. The Falcons, aside from their right guard position, they got Alex Mack at center. They've had their left tackle there for quite some time, high draft pick. Jake Matthews, pardon me. Mm-hmm. He was a top first-round pick for them. They have a good offensive line. How will that offensive line deal with the wave after wave of pass rushers that Philly can send? We know how good they were last year. This year they bring in Michael Bennett. They bring in Haloti. Like, they have new players that added strength on strength. That, to me, will decide tonight's game that I expect to be a low-scoring game.
And the Eagles have to rely on their running game to start to be able to help out Nick Foles, watch for some RPOs, and just watch also for the size, the difference between how big Philadelphia, their left and right tackle and their interior lineman, how small Atlanta is, undersized. They play on AstroTurf. Yeah. They like to be able to fly around.
Can't wait. Three of us on one couch tonight watching the game.
See, Jenna, you're going to be hanging out.
You got to spare. You got to save your lies up. You told them to lie about starting the season with it on your refrigerator circle.
Yeah.
And then now you talked about us being on your couch tonight.
Well, C's going to be on an airplane because C's calling games this weekend. But you're welcome to come over. I got a spot for you in Harlem, Jenna.
My team always calling me out on things. Awesome. All right, Falcons and Eagles tonight. We'll talk much more about this. But coming up, some Steelers teammates have some harsh words for Le'Veon Bell. That is next.
Fox Sports Golf host Shane Bacon here, and with summer winding down, I wanted to tell all First Things First listeners about an exclusive offer from TeeOff.com. Instead of sitting around reading about all the expert opinions of the Hans redesign of TPC Boston, get out and play a round or two at Pine Hills Golf Club in Plymouth, Mass., a 36-hole facility containing two championship-style golf courses designed by Jack Nicklaus and Reese Jones, or you can tee it up at one of the thousands of great golf courses across the country on TeeOff.com by PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour. And you can do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener to my podcast, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with the single-use promo code TeeOffBacon. And hey, if you're a golf fan, come on over and give my podcast a listen, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. We try to make golf not so, you know, golfy. That's the goal, right? The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. It's golf, but without all the rules. Okay, back to First Things First.
Moving on
Speaking
to Le'Veon Bell now,
Le'Veon Bell's teammates.
Yet to report to practice. He is now considered unlikely to play Sunday against the Browns, and his agent has hinted that he could very well sit out for an extended period of time. His agent also went on to say he's trying to protect L. Bell's long-term value. Some of Bell's teammates were not very happy with their running back.
I think we were just all grown enough to finally accept things at some point. You're just like, all right, you know what? If you don't want to be here, it is what it is. And hold out 10 weeks. It's totally fine with us. Like, as a team, we're totally fine. It takes 11 guys, not just one.
Do you take this personally?
No, with him not here now?
Plays out the way it has.
Honestly, I'm such a team guy that doesn't affect me at all. But at this point, it looks like to all of us that he's not in the game plan. So we're going to move ahead with Connor, and Connor's eager and ready to get out there.
In the ultimate team sport, we've created a league of individuals, in a sense. And I know the league is all about get your money, get paid. I love it. But my perspective is a whole lot different now. I'm in year 10. This guy, what is Le'Veon, about to go into year 7? You know, you're not getting younger. So win it, get paid next year. I get it. I understand it. Get your money. But I don't know. At least let us know.
Which is interesting because earlier in the week we had heard Pouncey say that I talked to him. He's coming in. He'll be here this week. I'm sure of it. He'll be here Wednesday. Then he's like, obviously I didn't know I was wrong. CeCe, what did you make of the reaction from Le'Veon Bell's teammates?
Well, first, I think the sports fans need to realize that with this franchise tag, when people put a franchise tag on a player, when it was first created with the collective bargaining agreement, the players, they agreed to it. They thought it was going to be outstanding, that at least they would be able to get the top 5 salaries long term so they would have the type of security. But no, it's become a very, very divisive tactic that ownership are using the way from preventing their best players from hitting free agency. It has not brought teams together. It has not brought their star players in the organization together because of the way owners have decided to utilize this as, man, I'm just going to pay a guy that salary for 1 year compared to paying them long-term the way we've seen these other contracts roll out this summer. So that's part of the problem. It creates a tension inside the locker room that a lot of times that fans can't see. And a lot of times fans, they don't want to talk about money. But money is a huge part of the game. And you heard Roman Foster, there's like, this guy getting ready to make 7 times as much as me. How much do you think he caring about me? No, you want your teammates to care about you. But every guy is a independent contractor. Le'Veon Bell is working for himself. Now, I'm working with the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I'm keeping this money for myself, and he has to do what's best for him. What becomes the problem is the trust issue between players. Forget what you tell the organization. That might be something. But what you tell your fellow players, and when you tell them, I'm going to be there on Wednesday, last year you showed up on Monday, so they were under that, and they put their word out there that this is the most times I've seen offensive linemen interviewed in a long time in the NFL. Like, last year, we saw the Pittsburgh Steelers struggling with their message point. What did I tell you the other day? The general manager releases a statement. The quarterback says something. The head coach says something.
Yeah, you said from the beginning, get on the same page.
No, they're not on it. They're even further apart now. Now, they are a talented team. Can they overcome it for the first part of the season? This has just become normal family business for the Pittsburgh Steelers. People operate their business and their families different. And this is the way the Steelers have done things. And making L. Bell, putting that franchise tag on him, has not helped the locker room. And we saw that boil over into the team yesterday.
And Ramon Foster, who said a lot of inflammatory things yesterday, we played some of them. C mentioned he's scheduled to make 7 times more than me. Should be noted a couple things. One is Ramon Foster in his career has made more money than Le'Veon Bell. And Ramon Foster is also the union rep for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if you are going to come out in favor of management against one of your union brothers, then maybe that's not the position for you. But I'm shocked to see teammates, multiple teammates, going against a player getting his money. Where were these guys, if they wanted Le'Veon Bell there, where were they in OTAs or at any point in the preseason saying, you know how we could have gotten L. Bell here, is if the Steelers would have given him a real long-term contract. And what people need to understand, because, oh, well, the Steelers, they did. They offered him 4 years, about $60 million. The Steelers have a philosophy. They even applied it to Antonio Brown. If you are not a quarterback, we will not guarantee a single dollar after year one. So it's all year-to-year contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers, unless you're Ben Roethlisberger. So L. Bell would have been crazy to accept a long-term deal with 1 year of guaranteed money as opposed to what he has right now, which is a one-year deal with 1 year of guaranteed money. If L. Bell is such an imposition on the team, he's done him a favor by not signing the franchise tag yet. If James Conner is the next great superstar in this league, save your $14.5 million, rescind the tag, and let L. Bell become a free agent. And see if the Jets would like to pay him. See if the Colts would like to pay him.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen because he's a great player and because they need him. And the only leverage he has is to withhold his services as long as possible. And so this is...
But that's not it's not the argument of when he should come in. He told his teammates one thing.
Wait, we're basing that off on what Marquise Pouncey said, right?
I've been knowing Marquise Pouncey since he's been in high school.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And you can believe that what he said. He's been a team leader, University of Florida, when they won those championships. All right? And since he's been with the Steelers, he has been a leader. He said, don't worry about it. He'll be there Wednesday. The only way a guy says something like that is if he talked to L. Bell and L. Bell expressed that to him. So that's really the conversation here. It's not about, the tender, all this. It's about what's the commitment to each other in that locker room.
Well, the other thing that got this to a boil yesterday before those comments was the comments of his agent.
Of his agent, who came out and said he's trying to protect him long term. He knows that if L. Bell does come in, the way the Steelers are going to use him is going to be grind it out, give him a bulk of the workload, and let him just basically.
Isn't that the deal every other player has?
Yes, but there's that we have seen.
What player are they trying to preserve like a fine wine? We're going to sit you over here and let you marinate for a few years and let you just take some time off. What other player are they not trying to use this year to try to get the best out of him, unless a guy's been drafted, someone like Baker Mayfield? Who? Everyone else is under that same thing. You're going to go as hard as you can go. You're going to go as long as you can go. If you need surgery, maybe you can put that off until the offseason. That is the NFL. What's changed?
Hold on. We have absolutely seen teams talk about making sure they are careful and judicious with this position's workload. And if any player has concern about workload, it's the player who's the all-time NFL record holder for touches per game. That's Le'Veon Bell. What his agent essentially said is, we're worried they're going to use him the way you use a rental car, which is, man, this ain't my car next week.
But this is the Pittsburgh Steelers. You got to trust in what they've done for a long, long time. Now, Pittsburgh Steelers are not going to, because you know what they're trying to do, Nick? They're trying to win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
It wouldn't make sense to give them 400 carries during the regular season if they said James Conner is as good as he is. So they're going to be able to this is the first year, they're going to take some of the workload off of them because it doesn't matter what they do in the regular season. It matters in the postseason. So they are not going to wear out one of their best offensive players just to wear him out he's not going to be useful in the playoffs.
Well, no. I'm not arguing they would do it as like a punitive measure, like to stick it to L. Bell. But we also, Mike Tomlin famously about a decade ago said he's going to run Willie Parker till the brakes fall off. And he did, go ahead, Steve.
And most football coaches do that. Tell me what football coach is not trying to get the best out of their player.
You always want the best out of your player, but we have heard countless coaches talk about being careful about the number of touches their running backs have, especially if you have a long-term investment with them. You don't think that's been a subject of conversation, the 380 touches during a season, about worried about the guy's long-term future, especially if he's a big asset that you have long-term investment in?
The truth of the matter, Nick, is I'm sick of L. Bell, all right? Either sign the contract and come in or just shut up. All right? Don't tell your teammates something and not be dependable. What about that? Forget about the carries. What about what I told you is true? I'm going to be able to keep my word on what I told you and then now have your agent. His agent hadn't said nothing all this time. L. Bell's been speaking for himself. Now he throws his agent out there as if his agent is the best representation, what's best for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because your agent represents the business. What you tell your fellow guy, I played with 7 guys in the Hall of Fame, and my word was my bond to them. When it's time to go to work, I'm getting ready to go to work. I ain't going to be sitting around talking about, well, how many bricks am I lifting today, buddy? How many bricks am I lifting? How many are you lifting today? No, when we sign that contract, we sign up to do our absolute best, not for the coach, not for the organization, but for that dude next to me to make sure he don't get hurt. That's why we do that.
All right, well, the Steelers are facing the Browns this weekend. It is unlikely that L. Bell will be with the team when the two face off. Time now for Nick's Fantasy Update, sponsored by DraftKings. Nick, you're picking week one wide receivers today. Give us one stud and give us one value pick.
Stud is A.J. Green. This is an easy pick. He's $7,300 on DraftKings. That's expensive, but he's up against the Indianapolis Colts. I expect him to be targeted 12 to 15 times. I expect a big year from A.J. Green, one of your favorite guys, C, and I love the matchup against the Colts secondary and the Colts' lack of pass rush.
He's got a little help on the other side with John Ross, going to help his numbers, what we've seen A.J. accustomed to. 1,200, 10 touchdowns, A.J. Green this year.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah,
and then
my value
pick. All right, see, this is a guy I think you're going to like to pick. How about Robbie Anderson, a guy you talked to a couple weeks ago? Mm-hmm. Sam Darnold's number one target. They're up against the Detroit Lions. Indoor, Monday Night Football. Robbie Anderson knows how big this year is for him, especially given what happened off the field after a really good year on the field. Robbie Anderson, only $5,700 on DraftKings.
Big year, watch the big plays. We want 3 plays of over 20, 25 yards. That's what he did really special last year. Little short of a 1,000-yard receiver. A lot of people don't know about him, but get good value out of Robbie Anderson.
All that and one meaningful conversation with Chris Carter. That makes him a value pick. This is the First Things First podcast, the episode brought to you by ForHims.com. It's time to discuss an issue that you may not want to hear. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. But good news, it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace what you lost. How will you feel a year from now if there are bald spots creeping up? Well, here are your options. Do you want a bald spot to pop up or your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? This is where ForHims.com comes in. It is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and an overall helpful product for men. That's right. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. There are no waiting rooms or weird doctor visits down a back alley. Just go to ForHims.com and take action today. It is so easy. Products will be brought right to your door. Here's how to do it. Order now. Listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to ForHims.com/first. That's ForHims, ForHims.com/first. ForHims.com/first. Time now for us to go viral. No play from the Eagles Super Bowl 52 victory was more memorable than the Philly special. And what better way to celebrate it than by making a statue, which is exactly what Bud Light did at Lincoln Financial Field, depicting the moment Nick Foles asked Doug Peterson if he wanted to run said Philly special. And there it is.
Oh, so Bud Light put it together. Now it makes sense. Jenna, you told me during the break something I didn't know, that the play was actually called initially
the Philly Philly.
Philly Philly, like Bud Light's Dilly Dilly.
Dilly Dilly, exactly.
And so, but now we know it is the Philly special, but Bud Light, maybe the name was an homage to them, and now they got, that's a real live statue.
It's a real
bronze
live
bronze and
statue.
Everything.
There's
that's
more.
Great. It's not alive. It's poor choice of words. I meant legit. When they said Bud Light made a statue, I thought it was going to be like what you see at the grocery store.
Little, yeah.
Like out of beer cans, right. But like that's a real statue.
Yeah, at the stadium. They're going to have a couple cold ones next to that one. Through the years, that will be an iconic spot.
Absolutely.
Iconic play.
Meet me at the Philly Special statue is what people will say before the game. Yeah. Walk in together.
And then you say, dilly dilly.
Or if they say another word, I'll give you a Philly Philly. I'll give you a fresh one.
Pap, pap. Pow, pow. Pow, pow. Hey, time now for stories to start your morning. Jimmy Garoppolo starts his 2018 campaign against the stingy Minnesota Vikings defense. Jimmy G said that facing the Vikings will be a chess match. Your typical bishop to E3. CC, what problems do the Vikings pose for Garoppolo?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be chess, but it's going to be a lot of one-on-one. The Vikings, what they do, they play a lot of man-to-man coverage. Their emphasis this year on their defense is trying to create turnovers, and they're going to get after the quarterback. This will be Jimmy G's toughest test since he left New England last year in a trade.
Well, there's a new thing with athletes calling things that are nothing like chess, chess. DeMarcus Cousins called his move a chess move, more like checkers.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
A little connect four. I'd say this one's going to be more like rock'em sock'em robots. Like,
oh, yes.
I expect the Vikings defense to be getting after the under-talented Niners offense. The Niners might be able to protect Jimmy G. I don't know how any of the skill position guys can get open.
Let's move on to Adrian Peterson. He signed with Washington late in August, and some wondered what Washington was thinking at the time. Apparently, they were thinking starter. Peterson will start Sunday against his former team, the Arizona Cardinals. See, what do you think would qualify as a good week one outing for him?
It's really hard to put expectations on Adrian, but you got to get him some carries now. If he touches the ball 15 times, there's a chance he can get the Nick that 80 to 100 yards. The reason why I don't believe in running backs that are older is because it's hard to be consistent. He might have one good game, but how many more weeks will it be before he can duplicate that? That offensive line is a much improved offensive line. So I do give them a chance. Winning football games at this stage, getting Washington off to a good start, Nick.
Listen, if he's going to have any chance of success, he has to be the starter. He can't be a change of pace, come in for six carries a game back. So I'm very skeptical that he has anything left. But if he does have something left, it's got to be as your starter, run some I formation, get him a dozen carries in the first half. Like, that's the only path to success for Adrian Peterson at this stage in his career. And even that path is a narrow one.
All right, moving on to Khalil Mack. The Bears traded two first-rounders to Oakland for the All-Pro, but apparently the Rams made an offer as well. The Raiders were worried L.A. would be drafting too low for the picks to be worth the Khalil Mack trade. Nick, what do you make of this report?
Well, I make of this report that whenever a team says we don't have money, we can't figure it out, man, they can always figure out the money for at least a year. Like, if they were going to trade for Khalil Mack, they were still going to re-sign Aaron Donald. They were going to give Khalil Mack an extension. Like, they were going to figure it out for this year and worry about tomorrow's problems tomorrow. That would have been insane if the Rams adding Khalil Mack. They'd have the two best defensive front seven guys in the league. I don't know how they could have done it, but they offered a first-round pick for him.
And they were trying to recreate the fearsome foursome.
Yeah.
I mean, they serious about it. I love the fact, though, that they are actively pursuing players. It's just nice to have their name out there as far as NFL news. It lets you know, man, they are trying to win. I don't believe all teams are trying to win. The L.A. Rams are going for it.
Trying to win. Absolutely.
All right, finally, Marcus Mariota will try to have a bounce-back year. Four with a new coach, a new running back, and Deion Lewis. Some might even have gone as far as picking Lewis in their fantasy draft yesterday. What? Mariota said, I'm excited for this team, and I look forward to the challenge. CeCe, what do you think you need to see from Mariota this weekend against the Miami Dolphins?
Like Buffalo, people forget last year this team made the playoffs.
They actually won a playoff game.
I mean, so it's just like, wow, what are your expectations? Can the Titans, can they compete this year? Yeah, they can compete. And the reason why, they are a very, very physical football team. Around the league, they say the Titans are one of them kind of games that when you play them on Sunday, you still soar until a Wednesday game. People are like, well, what does that equate to? Man, they play football. They run the football with Derrick Henry, bang it at you. And now they have what I think is one of the best change of paces in Deion Lewis getting him over from New England, because he is a weapon out of the backfield. He is a nightmare for people in space. So I like Mariota. He'll get the ball out of his hand. Now, people, they might be shocked that they realize what a good athlete Marcus Mariota is, but out of the pocket and on the run, he's one of the worst throwers in the bottom five throwers that we see from a completion standpoint on the move.
And so, that's the opposite of what you would have expected.
All the other guys that can run, they're used to running. They throw better running than they do sitting in the pocket. Vic, Cunningham, these guys, this skill.
Russell Wilson's great at it.
Oh, man. I mean, so it's an odd set of circumstance that he has there. How does he improve on that? Last year, he not necessarily got better. We saw him and Carr kind of suffer the same type of injury in the next season. Kind of went backwards.
Similar regression.
You know, so what will he do in this year? It's really this franchise. They can win 10 games. They can win 10 games, but him and Deion Lewis, outside, he needs one of his young receivers. Corey Davis, you know, where is he at this point? Is he going to step up in year two?
I think the Titans might be one of the most underrated teams in the league right now, and here's why. I thought last year they had below average coaching, and from a statistical standpoint, they had well below average quarterbacking. Mariota, after an excellent year two, had more interceptions than touchdowns last year. He had a 79 rating. And despite all that, they won 9 games. They had a big comeback win over the Chiefs in the playoffs. They got to the second round of the playoffs. So if Vrabel is just league average his first year as a head coach, to me, that's an upgrade over Mike Mularkey. If Mariota is just almost as good as he was in year two, that's a big upgrade to what he was last year. And you mentioned they added Deion Lewis. And the other reason folks should, of course, watch this game is my man right there is making his debut as an NFL analyst. So if you have the Sunday package or if you live in Tennessee or Miami, turn on this game and listen to my man do it. I'm very excited.
I'm going to butcher a few names.
Don't worry about that. You're not there. What do you say? You're not there for the names. Who's calling the games?
Sam Rosen. Mm-hmm. Okay. Our guy Sam.
That's what he's there for. You're there for the analysis. There you go. So don't worry about that, see?
Oh, I'm not worried.
Okay.
Good stuff.
And I got a pretty good day job.
Patriots came about this close to winning the Super Bowl last year. And while Belichick breaches the concept of just moving forward, that has to sting just a bit for some in that locker room. They'll kick off their 2018 campaign against the Texans on Sunday. 41-year-old Tom Brady leading a retooled offense against a defense that includes J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney. Oh, and a stud quarterback named Deshaun Watson. All right, see, what has to happen for the Texans to upset the Patriots week one?
You got to figure out what they're going to do. Because we don't know what New England's going to do week to week. And now you're talking about the first game of the season. No Edelman, Gronk, we haven't seen him in the preseason. So what are they going to do? Man, they're going to throw the ball sideways against them. They're going to pitch the ball to the running backs or a wide receiver. Philip Dorsett, unbelievable speed, 4.3. I'm talking about this guy is electric. Cordell Patterson, another 4.3 guy. Not great receivers they've proven down the field. They're veteran football players. This is a critical year for them. How does Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, utilize these guys in the backfield or at the wide receiver position? I don't know. Philip Dorsett, he's kind of been a disappointment after being a first-round pick for the Colts from the University of Miami. Cordell, we've gone over him, first-round pick from Minnesota, going to Oakland. He's been a great special teams player, and his running ability is the best attribute that he has, but he needs the ball in his hand. So I'd look at them. They will not let J.J. Watt wreck this game. They will not let Clowney wreck this game. They realize that their secondary is the biggest question marks as far as that defense, and they're going to get that ball out of Brady's hand quick. Watch how quick Tom gets the ball out of his hand to try to figure, and then we're going to have to try to figure out what they're doing. I believe New England goes a lot of no huddle and try to get the Texans in a substitution pattern and get a lot of violations. But beginning of the season, there's no team harder to evaluate and predict what they're going to do than the Pats.
The one thing that I think we can predict that the Pats will do offensively is try to get Gronk involved somehow, particularly with no Edelman, particularly with, as you were talking about, the lack of talent on the outside, no Deion Lewis as he'll be in Tennessee. Like, Gronk is going to have to be a big part of this game plan. The Texans signed Tyrann Mathieu this offseason. If you're the Texans, he's an undersized guy. Everyone's undersized compared to Gronk, but he's undersized in general. But he can be great at his job. How would you use Mathieu or maybe Kareem Jackson, who's a corner converted to safety, defending Gronkowski, who's the only plus pass catcher that the Patriots have right now?
Yeah, Tyron and Kareem will both be guarding. One plays strong, one plays free safety. But the way they rock and roll the safeties now, where they interchange each other, Kareem's a bigger guy. I expect him to try to be a little more physical and also be matched up on Gronk, potentially in the red zone. Tyron a little bit smaller, far quicker, superior quickness than Gronk. I expect him to guard Gronk in the field but play off of him and play like Gronk, Muhammad Ali, and Tyrant is Sugar Ray. Okay. Stay away from him. Poop.
Don't let
Stay
him away. Touch you.
Don't let him push off on you because that's the advantage that Gronk has. Utilize your quickness.
And what will that do to how Brady sees Gronk? If Tyron's there, but Gronk's not making contact with him, will that make Brady shy away from him?
It will make him not necessarily know what to do or to be able to hold on to the ball, and that's what you want to do, to make it just not a clear-cut who's his number one target. You want to try to be able to change it from Tom. Play off of him, and when he thinks you're going to play off, but eventually you got to get to the quarterback. Philadelphia in the Super Bowl, ultimately it rolled down to one play, mm-hmm. Brandon Graham getting to Brady.
On the other side of the ball, Deshaun Watson comes out now, and you talk about this all the time, and Chris Caney has done that this week. Don't do more than you're asked to do. You know you only played a handful of games last year, and you lit it up, and it was great, but don't come out and try to play and prove to people that you are this great, right? How do you kind of temper that a little bit so he doesn't come out and do too much and still is as, you know, important a tool for them?
Well, I don't have the philosophy for all quarterbacks trying not to do too much. If Deshaun, they can't win with him not doing a lot.
Okay.
The way the offense functioned, maybe with those other quarterbacks Bill O'Brien had, but when Deshaun got in there, man, they were wide open. They were almost like a college team. They were RPOs. They were throwing it deep. Like, they have to be an explosive offense and take advantage of the lack of rush people that New England has and the big plays that they gave up last year. They have not shored up that part of their defense. So those are the things that I would concentrate on. That offensive line, though, for the Texans, you got to be careful. You got to be careful in dropping the quarterback back. Now, New England doesn't have pass rushers, but they can create a rush through blitzes, TE stunts. That's what I expect the Pats to do.
They're going to look like they have a pass rush this weekend because – every team that played the Texans every week last year looked like they were the damn Philadelphia Eagles. You know what percentage of dropbacks the Texans were pressured last year? This was across multiple quarterbacks. 40%. 40% of the times they tried to throw the ball to quarterbacks under pressure. Highest in the league. Deshaun Watson was 41. Tom Savage, 38. Didn't matter who was back there. That offensive line could not hold up. Texans didn't get no better at offensive line. They didn't have a first-round pick. They didn't have a second-round pick. They didn't have a lot of money in free agency. This is the worst offensive line in football. So that is going to be the struggle for Houston all year. Now, conversely, I mean, J.J. Watt, the last time we saw him play a full season, he had 17.5 sacks and won Defensive Player of the Year. Since then, he's done some amazing things off the field. But since then, he's played 8 games on the field, has 1.5 sacks total in those 8 games. When they drafted Clowney, the idea was we're going to have Clowney and Watt bookends. One got hurt, the other got hurt, one got hurt, the other got hurt. Theoretically, this is the first time we will ever see them both full strength, full go. Is J.J. Watt still J.J. Watt? That is an enormous question for the entire NFL this year. And as the Patriots have some lack of continuity on the offensive line, we'll get to find that out at least a little bit this week. And, mm-hmm. What can we expect from J.J. Watt? I feel like I know more of what to expect from Clowney at this point than I do Watt. If J.J. Watt is anywhere close to who he was the last fully healthy season, this will be one of the most dangerous front sevens in the league. DeAndre Hopkins was targeted more than any number one wide receiver in football last year. He could take advantage of a Patriots secondary, assuming Deshaun's not running for his life the entire game.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, can Odell Beckham just stop Jalen Ramsey in their week one showdown? We're looking forward to it. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Chris Caney is here. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jenna. How you
doing? Talking about your former team getting ready to play this weekend.
Oh, yeah. The Jacksonville Jaguars are going to check the Giants' oil this coming Sunday. Oh. We're going to find out about who the New York Giants are
going to. You brought out that quote. That's my Super Bowl quote. When they upset New England, that's what Caney told me before the game. I don't know how good they're going. I don't know how many points they're going to score, but we're going to check their oil.
That's it. You already know.
All right. Speaking of oil changes, the Giants are hoping for a 180 from whatever that was last season. Giants and their shiny big offensive weapons will open their season against the Jaguars and that ferocious defense, or another. In other words, it's Odell against Jalen. Odell Beckham Jr. and Jalen Ramsey. After Beckham got his big contract, Ramsey tweeted, not congratulations, but instead, it's going to be a show very soon, referring to Sunday's showdown between the two teams. Odell says he knows it'll be a tough matchup.
This is probably, if not the best, one of the best corners in the league. There's no way around it. And this defense that they have is, you know, they have 6-7 Pro Bowlers, maybe more on that team. They have a very good scheme. They're probably the best defense in the NFL. So we have a very tough challenge ahead of us. But I think we're all excited about the opportunity just to be able to come back, play football again. I know that I'm very excited. So it's definitely going to be a good match.
Chris, he's saying all the right things. Absolutely. Who has the advantage on Sunday? Will it be Odell or will it be Jalen Ramsey?
Well, I think it will be Odell. But before we even get to the football part of it, the last time Odell Beckham Jr. had a matchup against the quote-unquote best corner in the league, which was Josh Norman in 2015, there was a meltdown on the field. So we're going to find out if Odell Beckham Jr. really matured. And you saw John Mara this offseason talk about wanting to see that maturation before they gave him the contract. They gave him his new deal. We'll find out if he's evolved as a player and a personality on the field. But in terms of the X's and O's, yeah, it feels like it's a favorable matchup for Odell Beckham Jr. Just watching what Jalen Ramsey did against Antonio Brown in last year's two matchups, Jalen Ramsey played a lot of off coverage against Antonio Brown. And AB's not a big guy, so I don't understand why he decided to give him free release off the line of scrimmage. But to me, if you're a big corner, which Jalen Ramsey is, he's 6'1", 200 pounds, you would try to jam the receiver at the line of scrimmage, throw off the timing between the quarterback and the receiver, and create some opportunities. Jalen Ramsey did that in the regular season matchup against AB in the Pittsburgh Steelers, forced two interceptions, but AB still had 10 catches for 157 yards. So I think Odell Beckham Jr. has the advantage when going up against Jalen Ramsey, just based on how Jalen Ramsey approaches receivers with similar size and skill sets.
And I think if you ever have a great receiver against a great corner, typically, especially with the way the rules are, the advantage to the receiver. Like that's the way the league is designed. It is historic individual seasons from all-time greats, like Revis's best year, when we talk about the number one corner just shutting down guy after guy. So I do think Odell has the advantage, but I think what you talked about in the beginning could be the most important part here. Odell, we know how emotional he is. This is going to be the first game he's played fully healthy since the playoff game. I mean, remember last year, before he broke his leg, he hurt his ankle, or before he broke his ankle, he had the ankle sprain in training camp in the preseason game and wasn't fully healthy throughout the beginning of last season before he got hurt. So he's going to be as amped up, I would imagine, for a game as he's been in his NFL career, since maybe his first game of his NFL career, because it's been so long since he played. He knows who he's up against, and we know Jalen is going to be talking. So is Odell able to stay within himself? If he is, I do think he has the advantage. And one in the playoff game, there were even some plays where Jalen had perfect coverage, and AB still came down with great plays, because if it's a good enough throw and the receiver's good enough, there almost is no coverage good enough in most situations, which is another reason why the advantage should skew towards Odell's favor, as long as he doesn't let Jalen do what Jalen did with AJ Green and others, which is chirp enough to get in their head.
Well, Jalen's definitely going to be talking. Typically, when you get into a game like this, and I've been in a lot of matchups like this where people come to you and they ask the question, who has the advantage? And those matchups were against, I'm talking about great players, guys in the hall, Darryl Green, Aeneas Williams, Rod Woodson, battled Rod for 15 years in the NFL, and also 3 years in college when he went to Purdue, Deion Sanders. When the coach comes to you with matchups like this, at the end of the day, you just want a stalemate. These are great players. Any other matchup that I have, if the guy doesn't have those type of credentials, I'm trying to dominate the game and be a decisive part to my team winning. Odell's got to go into this game with the mindset of, Jalen's not going to play better than me, but I'm not going to be able to dominate him. That's out of respect for how good Jalen is. I believe Jalen will travel with Odell all over the field. So it should be a special matchup, but the advantage, typically, the wide receiver knows where he is going. He knows the snap count. But it's about teammates. This is not golf. This is not tennis. Man, you need some help. And Jalen has more proven help. His front four will get after the Giants. All right?
Yep.
People going to want a refund after they see Nate Solder. They're going to be like, hey, now, what did I get out there at left tackle? He's a big guy, great pass protector, but not a dominant run blocker. And the rest of the offensive line, Ereck Flowers, unless you can't hide him. They'd be like, hey, where's he at in the program?
And certainly not against this defense.
Oh, he's at right tackle. Mm-hmm. There is no easy assignments on the interior of the offensive line or on the exterior. So that's what I look at in these matchups. When you talk about great player going against great player on the perimeter, man, you got to try to draw a stalemate. But if Odell, the way he loses, it's not by having two catches, 20 yards. It's by the optics. What does he look like in this game? I don't care if he doesn't run well, but what does he say? What's his mannerisms? Because people are going to judge him on a totally different scale now, and he needs to be aware of that. So for me, winning for Odell, what do the optics say after? Does he say the right things after the game? Are there exchanges during the game? Because it's a physical game,
mm-hmm.
and I want Odell to have his swagger and everything. You have to realize that, but does he keep it right there, or does he go beyond that? That will be one of the signs with the New York Giants. Are we happy with OBJ? And I believe he gets it done.
Yeah, I think he gets it done, too. But I think the biggest part is the last part of your statement, CeCe. How does Odell react in the game when he's not able to dominate Jalen Ramsey? The one thing that I know being close to this team is that they feed off of Odell Beckham Jr. We know he's an emotional player. The team has taken on his persona for good or bad. And a lot of the ways we talk about Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers, that's the New York Giants with Odell Beckham Jr. So if he goes off the rails, this team could be in trouble. And their whole game plan, everything that they're trying to do on the offensive side of the ball, it starts with number 13. He's the guy on that team that dictates front and coverage. We like Saquon Barkley. We love Evan Ingram. Sterling Shepard is a good slot receiver. But it starts with Odell. And if he can't go out there and at least be that force multiplier, make things easier for everybody else on the offensive side of the ball, it's going to be a long day for Eli Manning and that Giants offense.
And the reason Odell's so valuable is because he, 14 times a season, will skew the numbers in the Giants' advantage. His other 10 teammates are typically going to be going up against 9 defenders because he's going to dictate some form of double coverage or safety help. Against the Jags, that's not necessarily the case. Like, do you think Doug Marrone's comfortable telling Jalen the majority of plays one-on-one, deal with him? Or do you, like, I think it, however often they're comfortable doing that, it's more often than any other team in the league.
I think when you do that, though, you're going to put heat on Eli. So, yeah, I think he's got more confidence. And Jalen, if he plays bump and run against Odell, Odell could struggle. Because he will engulf him. I believe he's beyond 6'2". Me standing next to him, I believe he's beyond 6'2" as far as height. And it's hard for quarterbacks when they look at a small receiver matted against a big, tall corner.
Jaguars visiting the Giants to open up their season. Chris, stick around. We've got so much more coming up. Can Nick Foles keep the magic going against the Falcons? 2-9 next on First Things First. First Things First is sponsored by DraftKings. Play free tonight for your shot at $1 million top prize. It's all good. Back here with Chris Canty. Falcons and Eagles kick off the NFL season tonight. Get excited. It's a rematch of the NFC divisional round. Nick Foles and the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles taking on Matt Ryan and that high-flying offense of the Atlanta Falcons. Foles will be getting the start in relief of the injured Carson Wentz. Chris Canty, what will be the biggest challenge for the Eagles tonight against the Falcons, in your opinion?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for them is being able to dominate the line of scrimmage. And when I look at this game, it's going to come down to how the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line plays against an undersized Atlanta Falcons defensive front. I love what the Falcons do on defense. They fly around, they get after it, but they're not very big. And so when you have big guys leaning on small guys, that takes away a lot of energy from those little guys. So I look at that in terms of the matchup that everybody needs to watch. That's going to determine the outcome. We know that the Eagles' offense has struggled during the preseason. Mm-hmm. The starting offense didn't score touchdowns, so it'll be interesting to see how they start this game and see if they can get Nick Foles into a rhythm. They didn't run any RPOs, so I'm sure we're probably going to see a heavy dose of that in the game plan tonight. But ultimately, it's going to come down to how they run the football, and that starts with the offensive line.
I mean, to elaborate on your point, if people didn't watch the Falcons a ton last year, they just remember the Falcons 2016 as this high-flying offense. Think of the way the Indianapolis Colts in the Peyton Manning era built their defense. We expect to have a lead. We expect to be playing indoors. We want to be able to rush the passer, fly around the field. The Falcons built this defense similarly. We expect to have the lead. We're playing indoors. So that's why they're an undersized team that, by the way, has a bunch of guys who I like on their front seven as far as pass rushers. But I understand your point, which is with Jason Peters coming back, with Lane Johnson at right tackle, can the Eagles just overpower the Falcons' front seven, which could be a huge issue because I think the Falcons' strength defensively is their front seven. Mm-hmm. Their secondary is, I think, the weakest part of their entire team offensively and defensively. It's the job of the front seven to make sure you can't exploit the secondary because they're getting to Nick Foles.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. But I will say this about defensive linemen and pass rushers in particular. When you're tired, it's hard to get after the quarterback. So that's the one thing that you have to look for. And those big guys, when they're running the ball 25, 30 times, they're not gonna be trying to get after the quarterback. They're going to be trying to get to the sideline and get some water and some oxygen.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for the Eagles happens to be the guy that was MVP of the Super Bowl, and that's Nick Foles. Do they have the same faith in him after seeing him do what he did? Do they have the same faith in him? Because, Nick, you and I have discussed this so many times. We don't think he can play, duplicate what he did in Minnesota in the Super Bowl. He had a perfect quarterback rating on third down, NFC Championship, and in the Super Bowl. So we know that's not going to happen. But when he struggles, are the whispers, because this is Philadelphia now, and I just believe some of the shine after they see it on the trophy will worn off. What if the fans start calling for
Sudfeld?
Sudfeld. All
right. It's a short honeymoon.
I mean, like, I believe these. What if Nick struck? Do they even have the option that they can go to the backup? Now, they got the best roster, I believe, top to bottom in the league. But that faith in Nick Foles, will it be the same as it was last year? Because that carried them till they got to the championship game, and he played great football.
So how does the game plan change if they see early on that he is struggling and they're not going to go to Sudfeld? I mean, does the game plan change? Do you start running the ball more? Does it become a shorter game for Nick Foles?
I think going into this game, you have to take advantage of your strength. That's that offensive line. You got to let Jason Peters, he's coming off injury, you got to let him roll off on some people. And the way you let offensive linemen roll off on some people, just hand it to the guy back there. It's easy. Instead of pass blocking, it's a more finesse game. Man, how do you get your mind right? Man, let's run the ball, all right? We know what Lane wants to be able to be a multiple Super Bowl winner, Lane Johnson, the right tackle. So let's put the game in their hands compared to putting the game in number 9's hand, Cam.
Yeah, the offensive linemen are a lot better moving forward than they are going backwards. So you want to be aggressive in your play calling and try to allow that offensive line and that running game to be the hammer for the offense. Make things easier for Nick Foles. If we've seen him struggle in the preseason, I think Doug Peterson understands that my quarterback is not necessarily in the same rhythm that he was once he got into the playoffs last year.
Right.
So you try to do everything that you can to give him an opportunity to get back into that rhythm. But a part of that is making sure that he doesn't cost your team in the game in the process. No turnovers, no big mistakes. Going up against the Atlanta Falcons, we know that that offense can score points. But the best way to play defense against what the Falcons are bringing to the table offensively is to keep them on the sideline. And you do that by running the ball.
And what I want to see on that side of the ball, from the Falcons side of the football, is have they improved in the red zone and on third down this year? It's very interesting week one matchup. Philadelphia last year, number one team in the league on third down. Number one team in the league in the red zone. You'd have never thought that going into the year. Who's going to be the best red zone team? Who's going to be the best third down team? Same team, Philadelphia. Meanwhile, Atlanta, with the transition from Shanahan to Sarkisian at offensive coordinator, they were still great on first down. They were very good on second down. When it got a little tougher, a little extra, oh, there's a bigger play. Third down, oh, now they're middle of the pack. Red zone, they were a bottom eight team in the league. A team with that much offensive weaponry. Julio Jones, Matt Ryan, healthy, all bottom eight team in the league in the red zone. That's where I want to see Atlanta this week and this year, because Julio Jones can't have three touchdown catches, one thrown by another wide receiver, Mohamed Sanu, again, like he did last year. And by the way, how important was the red zone for the Falcons last year? How'd their damn season end? In this building, against this team, first and nine, down five, chance to move on. Incomplete. 7-yard gain, incomplete, season over. Like, and by the way, one of those plays on the red zone was a shovel pass to your fullback. You only threw the ball into the end zone once. Sarkisian, I think, can be good. But he struggled in the biggest spots last year, and that really held this team back. We'll get to watch that tonight.
Well, we saw that with Matt Ryan in year one with Kyle Shanahan, and they improved in year two. So hopefully you see that same effect with Sark coming into this season.
Well, Dan Quinn knows which team he wants. He's held Devontae Freeman and Julio Jones out of four preseason games. Limited snaps for Matt Ryan. I mean, he wants these guys as fresh as possible, not only going into the season, but going up especially against this team. But when you look at the Falcons' identity, Do you look at them more the team 2 years ago or the team last year? Because they were successful both years.
Well, Jenna, you know how I feel about the Falcons. I feel like this is the team that represents the NFC in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
This is a really good team. And when you saw how their season ended last year, I think that's one of the things that's probably motivating this team. Matt Ryan and Julio Jones in particular coming into this season. Matt Ryan is all out of excuses. They gave him another contract extension, $150 million contract, $30 million a year. Yep. And then you saw Julio Jones, the Falcons addressed his deal as well. Those two guys have got to show up and be big factors for this team this year. And they really need to come out and set the tone tonight for their season.
Falcons, top five team in the NFL, trying to be the only team to represent the home field playing in their home stadium.
Yep.
Super Bowl 53 is in ATL, just like Minnesota last year. Right. Got real, real close. Can the Falcons be the first team to do that?
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.